I always kind of suspected that this is one of these electrical engineer guys who actually haven't done any electrical engineering in about 40, 50 years. They were in, middle management level. And then they did some presentations. You could hire them to come to your corporation and give a talk and a dollar will get you a dollar. There's a lot of consultants out there who I think are just on a grift of some kind, because, you know, I've never kind of gotten a talk from guys like that. I didn't think that they were just reciting car bumper stickers to me.
Yeah, a couple of stories from when I had my station. My dad and I had a station in Canarsie years ago. I started off essentially at a ground-mounted vertical when I first upgraded to general. And I remember realizing after a while that when I called the X stations on 20 meters with that antenna, I got through only after the guys running 5 watts to dipoles were getting through. And I realized that even though I was cranking out supposedly 250 watts DC input from my Drake TR4, my antenna was so inefficient. I had the equivalent of less than 5 watts coming out of the antenna, about the same signal as the QRP stations. And that was kind of upsetting. Then after a while, we finally put up a 20-meter dipole stretch between from the clothesline pole and across the roof. And we had a neighbor who had a mini product 20-meter beam who swore by it and kept telling me how fantastic the thing worked, and he had a rotator on it, etc. So I did a comparison with him between my 20-meter dipole and his great mini product 20-meter mini beam, running the same power, essentially same radio, a Drake TR4. Both his station, a couple of houses from me, and my station. And guess what? Signals to Europe. I remember doing a comparison with a station in, I think it was The Hague or Antwerp. Signals were identical. The mini beam was no better than a dipole. Go ahead.
It compressed the signal to the place you wanted to send it better, but with a lower efficiency. I'm sure the earthworms really loved your first antenna.
Particle antenna, nobody heard me on 20-meter phone. It was kind of pathetic. I did quite well with the 20-meter dipole. I could generally, in the clear at least, work everyone I heard. The problem was I was also 20 over 9 on the landlord's TV set.
Yeah, well, those are the days that people had to watch TV over the air. Thankfully, everyone's streaming, so you get a lot less tourists from your neighbors.
Imagine in an apartment setting, an apartment station is still a problem because you have a lot of a near field problem and leaky cables and that sort of thing. Might be less of that now with so much fiber optic, but the last couple of feet to your TV set are probably often not fiber optic. They're all RF. Now that I think about it, in the case of the TV sets at my place, they're the last couple of feet are Wi-Fi, which is RF, presumably, obviously in a way different frequency. But still, I suspect if I cranked up a 100-watt station in my apartment, I'd still have a problem. Go ahead.
Well, you might have a problem, but it would be a more mysterious one, I think, than it would be in the old days. Because in the old days, there's an analog signal interfering with another analog signal. In this case, even if you do interfere, you're interfering with a digital signal, and the digital signal is not going to probably bleed through much of your information of your transmission. So it would probably just give a somewhat more distorted television video signal when push came to shove. And, you know, people wouldn't kind of assume that it was some guy chatting in the next apartment.
Yeah, you know, I actually just had this conversation this afternoon with my best friend in the Bay Area, who said in the middle of the Work All Europe phone contest this weekend, and he's trying to work Europe from the West Coast, he suddenly couldn't hear anything, and his PAN adapter was totally covered with noise. And he walked around with a small receiver, walked around his garden apartment community with a small receiver, and found the noise coming from the next apartment. I suspect a cheap Chinese-made charger. So I said, well, why don't you see if you could offer to replace the cheap charger for your neighbor. He doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to tip off the neighbor that's a ham and perhaps cause some trouble, even though he's not violating any terms of his lease as long as he doesn't permanently attach an antenna to his building. And of course, you know, once people know you're a ham, they suddenly imagine all kinds of interference that isn't there. It's often people's perceptions and not reality.
I think it's less so these days. I mean, we're so under the radar these days that the average person wouldn't know what a ham was. They would think it had something to do with the pork industry. But I can understand his attitude that, you know, unless it becomes just unacceptable, that the hobby's ruined for him anyway. You don't usually want to advise neighbors because this is not the age of science. This is the age of voodoo. So you never quite know what your neighbors believe in these days.
Yeah, right. I think we're back in the early Middle Ages. It's kind of crazy. We have presumably responsible public officials announcing that here's a study that said all vaccines are poisons. I mean, it's crazy. Crazy talk! As a buddy of mine, ironically, when I worked in the government, would say. But I'm wondering whether the idea of picking I don't think he has the room to do enough spacing, but I was wondering if the idea of sticking a parasitic element on his Miracle Whip antenna on his balcony to try to null out the noise might help some. So I might suggest that to him. I think you're going to say he just doesn't have enough space on his balcony to do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, or he could invest in a relatively low expense noise canceller, you know, those things with an extra whip antenna, and you basically phase out the local noise.
I think he has one of those and didn't find it very effective with a previous noise. I used one of those in Canarsie years ago. I don't think it helped a heck of a lot. He's a very good experimenter. He is I tried to get him to write some articles on how well he's gotten his antenna to work and exactly how he did it, because he is an incredibly patient and meticulous experimenter. And if anybody can get stuff like that to work, he could. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, again, much like I was talking to Rich about, you know, why counterpoises aren't a specific length, these noise cancellation fits depend upon what the source of the noise is to begin with. If you have a very, very distinct point source that's isolated and not out in the open, you know, you could take his whip and stick it right next to the wall of the between himself and his neighbor, he might be able to get a significant degree of phase cancellation, as opposed to if there's some kind of fluorescent ballast or something going on outside some storefront or such that's, you know, a couple of yards away. It might not be that capable of being phased out. But, I mean, a point source from some kind of a wall wart or something that's next door to him, you know, if he's very lucky, he might be able to attenuate it to an acceptable degree.
Yeah, I'll toss out some of those ideas. He's the kind of guy, he has a doctorate in entomology, totally unrelated, but still is a very meticulous, very meticulous and patient experimenter, and he can get stuff to work that I don't think anybody else in ham radio could.
I don't know. I mean, I gone are the good old days when you used to know your neighbors reasonably well and you can kind of judge what goes on. You know, my neighbors are pretty much strangers to me, so, you know, thankfully I've never gotten a complaint. I don't know if it's luck or what. I always believe if at all possible, put your antennas up in the sky, because most people don't like to look up. So, you know, don't put it at ground floor, because, you know, Hal kind of learned his lesson by putting up that big vertical in front of his house and getting all of his neighbors really angry at him.
Which Hal, do you mean Hal K62PZ from the old days, or I'm not sure who you're referring to?
KC2GS, yeah, Hal. He just kept on annoying his neighbors. One day he brought his plane disassembled to his driveway. Another, he decided he was going to put up this massive vertical in front of his house. So, you know, he wasn't hiding anything.
There were a lot of issues with him, as I remember. He, as you said, he kind of attracted the trouble. I recall him being thrown off a couple of repeaters way back in the old days, again, probably before you were active in ham radio.
Well, I may have missed some episodes, but I was certainly here for when he used to threaten to go up in an airplane and throw feces out of his airplane onto the roof of sundry Limark executive board members. And, he threatened a politician while he was being videotaped for a local news show that was doing a story on his plane in his garage. So, yeah, he was his own worst enemy, unfortunately. And, I was there when he got dressed up as a pirate and wanted to go to the Limark Hamfest, and they wouldn't let him in.
Yeah, I remember him being thrown off the... I don't know if somebody's going to complain about us discussing this. I remember him being thrown off the Mayark repeater in the 1970s, for God's sakes, and I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea why he was being treated that way. But Yeah, I don't think I ever heard the story about his threatening his bomb, Weimar Squad members, but that does sound entirely in character. Go ahead.
Yeah, towards the end, he was delusional about writing books. He told everyone that he had written a book. Then I think it was a five-volume series because so many important things happened to him. And then he then announced that the final volume was going to explain how he was actually an alien from another galaxy. It was not even the Milky Way. He had to come up with a name for his galaxy. So he looked down on his cell phone, and he said the galaxy is called Galaxy 6. So couldn't even come up with a good name for a galaxy. But nevertheless, towards the end, he was a visiting alien from another galaxy. It was a curious peek into a mind that had gone totally wonkers.
F2CC.
Yes. How you doing there, Brian?
Hello, Roy. How are you?
I'm fine.
Well, that's good. I missed last week and probably the week before that, but I'm here now.
Okie doke. We're talking to Frank right now, but I'll be happy to go to you right when we're done with Frank.
That sounds good.
You know, we shouldn't really talk about those people who have shuffled off this mortal coil too much. He had his fans out there. I know them well, and they loved him. You know, sometimes some people find characters very amusing.
I guess he's right up there with Doc Levitt. Trying to remember his call sign, but you ever hear from, from some of the KCRC or KCRA guys about Doc Levitt? Go ahead.
Nope, not a single story comes to mind.
Yeah, he was another one of these characters when I was a kid. Supposedly back in the 60s, he got in serious trouble for having a parasitic on the JFK airport frequency. I guess that's 119.1. Couldn't swear that story is true, but I remember him calling me and lecturing me for a half hour. The guy was a dentist, that's why he was Doc. I remember him calling me when I was a kid one morning and lecturing me for a half hour about something I said on the repeater. And after I told him again and again, he was full of malarkey. I don't really remember the... This was literally 50 years ago. He finally said, "Oh, I got to go, Frank. I have a patient in the chair." Now, why was this guy chatting with me for a half hour if he had a patient in the dental chair again?
Yeah, sounds like another interesting character. I'm sure there have been many that have come and gone through repeaters. You know, I could just judge starting with 2011. That's when I got my license, and that's when I started to listen to all the goings-on here.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to remember. Oh, you asked. Maybe he'll chime in here. S. Howie, W2ML. He was active with me back in the 70s under his previous call sign. He remembers some of these characters. He probably remembers some wilder stories than I do. Good.
Okay. Usually when I ask anyone from KCRC to kind of tell me the story of the olden days, you know, I don't really get much of a good reaction. It's kind of like I'm giving someone up.
Yeah, Yeah. There's some interesting ones. I don't know if they're still on. Occasionally on Monday nights, some of the old-timers from Brooklyn get on the New England Free Reflector and talk about the olden days. And the guys we used to hang out on the 21.430. Ask Howie when he comes on here about 21.430, and he'll probably talk for hours about it.
Okay, I'll pencil it down, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some other wild ones. You'd remember the context of, but you know, there are some real characters in ham radio. One of them, story I heard more recently was that, I don't know if you've heard any of the W2ONV Voice of Battlebrook stories, have you?
No.
Yeah, he was a guy who had an outrageous signal on 20-meter phone for years and years and got kicked off the air by the FCC because he was running 25 kilowatt broadcast tube in his attic. I only heard that. In fact, I think I heard that story on here. I knew he had gotten in trouble with the FCC for running too much power. I did not know until I think one of the guys on here, it was Alan. You probably remember hearing that one. No. Probably 2 or 3 years ago. Good.
I don't think Alan's been on 2 or 3 years. I think the last time I talked to him was about 5 or 6 years ago, and he just kind of stopped in for a couple of days. And he previously kind of decided that he needed to spend time in other interests years earlier. I knew certainly Alan from the early days of me getting my my license and listening in to the technical net. You know, he was the guy who promoted Dick for his ARRL award.
Well, Dick certainly deserved it. Yeah. I know the last time I spoke to Alan on here, I remember he invited me, he wanted me to come up to K1TTT with him and do a contest, but I'm getting to be a kind of old fogey. I just really would have loved to do that years ago, but just even though I still enjoy doing some DXing on HF, I just don't really feel up to serious contest 24-hour BOC, as they call it, butted chair, BIC, I guess, butted chair contesting anymore. Just it has something to do with being married, guess?
Yeah, you know, life gets in the way. But, you know, it would be nice to have Alan back here at least occasionally. But, you know, he's doing... Last time I talked to him, it was so long ago, he was doing a lot of... fixing up his house that he owned. He had a lot of contractors in, and he was checking out their work with a fine tooth comb.
Oh, I didn't know he had a place to do that. I think we're talking about the same guy, Alan, N2KW. I remember talking about the same guy, and probably about two or three years ago. When I was invited to go to Vanuatu with a group who was wanted to do CQ Worldwide Phone from there. still known to some people as the New Hebrides out near Australia. And I'd asked him, was it worth $12,000 to do the trip? And he said, no way. You know, go, you want to do a ham radio trip and get the experience of operating from an island, go someplace closer in like Bermuda. And I may actually look to do that. I've operated from the Caribbean years ago. That was a hoot. In fact, I spent 2 weeks operating from Trinidad and Tobago back in 1988, and that was probably some of the most fun I ever had in amateur radio. Go ahead.
Yeah, there are guys who really do a lot of that to this day. I think we're talking about two different Allens, because the Allen that I'm thinking of, who was a regular on Limark and the technical net, and he was a hair transplant surgeon, so he was a doctor. So we're probably talking about two different Allens.
No, I'm talking about NCKW. definitely not. With all the respect to him, if he's listening, he is not a surgeon as far as I know. So, you know, we're talking about a different guy. Again.
Yeah, I've experienced your Allen. He used to pop up when Rich was discussing magnetic loops.
Yeah, that's right. For all I know, he'll pop up in here or send me an email about how I'm talking about him or something. But yeah, he's a magnetic loop kind of guy these days. I think he's in an apartment where he can't put up an antenna. He once had a quad on the roof of an apartment building in the village, and literally worked everything on the ARRL DXCC list. Something I'm not going to succeed in doing. I'd like to come close before the guy upstairs pulls my big switch for good, but I don't think I'll accomplish that feat. Nor am I sure I really care that much anymore, but it's kind of fun to see how far I can go on some of these awards I started on when I was a kid.
Yeah, we always kind of remember what kind of drove us as kids. I was talking a little bit earlier about guys and their fascination for FT8. I forget, did you like to putter around with FT8?
The remote site I use online has FT8 on board, so I do use it, though I honestly don't know a heck of a lot about it. Operationally, I'd say the main FT8 frequencies have become chaos, and I've kind of given up on them because even though in the right right environment, it works some amazing stuff on a clear frequency, it's nearly impossible to decode weaker signals through the chaos on the main frequency. But guys also do some of the rarer DX goes on Fox Hunt FH mode on discrete frequencies, on separate frequencies, and you work some amazing DX that way. And sometimes when even on the main frequencies, nobody else is around, got some ridiculous contacts like, let's see, Cyprus on 160 meters, Brazil on 150 meters, it's nearly impossible to work trans-equatorial on 160, and I actually have both those confirmed, so I know they were real contacts. Anyway, but yeah, under the right, you know, you get a clear frequency, you can work some, you know, just some ridiculous DX that you can't work any other way, and kind of find out what the real propagation is. As we said before, the rest of the band is dead. You can work the world on FT8 because everybody's on this one frequency. And on a clear frequency, it will work with ridiculously low power. It was never designed to work with guys running the legal limits the way they do now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's just people who like to show off a lot. But I don't know. It never really is scratched by any itch I had. I find it a fascinating kind of concept, and the algorithm and the error correction and the redundancy and all that makes it go. But I couldn't imagine just sitting there and just watching my computer run on autopilot for hours and hours and hours. But it's interesting. It certainly, like I mentioned earlier tonight, it provides me a way of checking to see if bands are completely dead. I know to kind of roll over to the FT8 region, because, whether it's dead or not, there's always going to be some action going on in FT8. So it's a good way to check to make sure that my antenna didn't break at night, overnight.
Yeah, that is good for. And yeah, no, I've never tried this thing of leaving FT8 running all night because I'm using a shared station online, so I'm not going to tie up a shared resource all night long to do that. There are people who just sit there and, do work all state DXCC and other awards, just letting the station do it for them automatically while they go to work and sleep and stuff. I think it's time probably for the net to move on. I've got to move on and do some other things before bedtime here. Actually, I'm going to try to pop back in for the SpaceNet report. Hopefully I'll make it back by then. I'm going to leave the app running here, so I may be listening, but I'm probably not going to come back for a while. WB2BX.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thank you for your participation. Always appreciated. And we'll talk to you down the line.
Okay, very good. And hopefully with the folks in memory lane, we didn't insult anybody. No offense intended. So that's me for now. WB2BX.
Yes, indeed. AC2GS here. Brian, how are you today?
I am doing fine, sir. Hope everyone out there is doing well as usual. And just wanted to go ahead and tune in and see what's going on.
Okay, well, it's the usual thing here. We talk technology, we talked a little bit about balance and such, common mode currents and other such things. Any interesting questions or topics you want to roll around tonight?
Okay, so let's see. I have a general coverage receiver. It's a Kenwood S300. And when my LED lights are on, it interferes unbelievably on pretty much several bands. Now, I know this already, but the question is it EMI or is it RFI? Is it coming through the wall, through the AC, or is it being transmitted via RF?
Well, that's a kind of a gray zone. Electromagnetic interference and a radio frequency interference, other than, frequency range, is sort of the same stuff. So it's kind of meaningless to kind of differentiate between the two. I find EMI is much more often used as a descriptor in the United Kingdom than the United States. RFI is usually something that Americans describe it as. But, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Because the only solution is to shut off my LED lights.
Yeah, or put it in a Faraday box in which your LED lights aren't going to be terribly useful that way.
AFCP.
Say again?
AF2P with a comment.
Sure, Ed.
Yeah, what you can do is run the radio off of a 12-volt supply. If it needs 110, use an inverter. And now you've eliminated the possibility of it coming through the AC lines. But as far as what Roy is saying, absolutely. It's all EMI, you know. And, you don't really care. You just want to get rid of it.
Yeah, it might be interesting to see if that helps at all, switching over to battery power. Probably it's going to turn out not to be the case. That's usually things like LEDs, if they're going to do that spraying, they spray every which way. But, you can try it.
I appreciate the comment, but it has provision for batteries inside where I can do that. But if that doesn't work, then I think it's going to be a very difficult way of remediating this, if not impossible.
Yeah. There's really no way to get the light out and keep the lower frequency electromagnetic waves in.
It's happening from the top of the radio down. What I mean by that is that it's from pretty much 0 to 30 megahertz. So the broadcast band obviously is bad, medium waves, and then going up from there. So I figured, I even put it into a surge suppressor, surge and spike protector. I didn't expect that was going to do very much, and it didn't.
Another comment.
Yeah, sure, comment away.
Yeah, those damn LEDs, they use a switch mode power supply. Now, as another experiment, you can remove that and use a battery. You'll have to build a linear supply, I suppose, to get to the proper current / voltage to drive the LEDs. But that will eliminate the switch mode, and that should eliminate the problem.
I don't know. At this point, if it was me, I'd just swap out the LEDs. They're probably less expensive than wiring up a linear power supply to the LEDs.
Swap out the LEDs for incandescents?
Oh, these are...
No,
I didn't realize. They're like pot lights, and if they're pot lights that are screwed in, an LED... if it's an LED bulb, yeah, if you can get an incandescent, do that.
Yeah, incandescents would get rid of it completely, but just another model of LEDs. They're not all created equal. Some are far better than others. They have better filtering on their switching circuits. So it may just be, especially if you have other model brand LEDs in the house that fit whatever base it screws into. You might just want to experiment and swap those, and if it works, buy some extra LEDs of that brand. Because, there's a wide range in the quality of LED bulbs these days.
I happen to be using Cree, CREE LEDs. They're one of the best in the business. And I'm also using some GEs and some other things. I just don't think it's worth the effort, I'll tell you something. It's not gonna be an easy fix, but I will try it on batteries, and see if that works. See what happens. But my gut feeling is that it's RF.
Yeah, it's RF, I think. But the question is whether this is kind of inherent in all LEDs. I don't think so. I use a lot. You're quite right. Cree is a very good brand name, but there's a big difference between a Cree that you buy today and a Cree that you bought 15 years ago.
Oh, so noted. But if the bowl works, I'm not going to go ahead and replace them. You know, I mean, I have a lot of bulbs in my home that are Cree.
Okay. You don't have to. Just a suggestion.
So, that's my dilemma for tonight. Other than that, things are pretty much the same. I do have a medical question for you.
Okay, if it isn't, about you, ask, and if I can, I'll try and answer.
I appreciate that, Roy. 3 days ago, I woke up, and I had such lower back pain. It was incredible, really severe. And I called, I took ibuprofen, I called my doc, and he prescribed Flexeril. And doesn't seem to be working too much. Is this just something that's going to take time? I'm just curious to know how things happen in your sleep. You know, it's not like you're going ahead and twisting yourself into 20 positions.
Well, it sort of depends on the individual. There's a lot of motion that takes place on some restless people while they sleep. If you've ever seen any kind of sleep study on YouTube or such, it's some guys do twirl around in their beds. So it's very possible and more than likely, because it's probably due to a muscle cramp or a muscle spasm that you experience. And if you stayed completely motionless, the chances of having that are minuscule. So what usually happens is you turn from one side to the other side, and for whatever reason, you're taking too much caffeine or a little bit too much stress, or there's a cold breeze blowing on you. It promotes a muscle spasm that doesn't even possibly wake you, but when you get up in the morning, you're stiff in that area, and it could last a week. Yeah, there's not a lot you could do. He gave you a muscle relaxant that's going to probably make you a little bit sleepy or sluggish. Anti-inflammatory medication, make sure you're covered so you don't get any kind of cold draft blowing from if there's an air conditioner or what have you, and it just takes time.
Terrible feeling, let me tell you.
Yeah, back injuries, back pain is one of the most common symptoms that humanity has. We're not quite finished in being designed for walking upright. Back pains are endemic in human beings. So it's not unusual, but that doesn't make it go away. You know, there's a lot of orthopedic doctors that have made lots and lots of money off of a lot of people with chronic back pain. And some of those specialists just kind of, for the most part, say, don't be too aggressive in treating it. Try and not take any stimulants and try and not make any sudden muscular movements. You can't really kind of control how you move when you sleep anyway, but hopefully it'll just slowly fade away unless you twist it and upset the back again.
I appreciate the advice. It's that Flexeril. I have the formulary name on it as well, but I just want to know, does it really work, or does it take time to build up?
It works a bit. It's a muscle relaxant, so it's a mild central nervous system depressant. It makes you a little bit groggy, a little bit sleepy, but it also slightly relaxes your muscles, but it's not going to be a dramatic benefit. It just is a little bit in the right direction.
Is there anything better than that?
Well, I mean, there's more effective tranquilizer/muscle relaxants. Back in the old days, doctors would just as easily give people Valium prescriptions, but I kind of overdoing it. You know, the benefit versus the symptoms of real heavy duty tranquilizers, I don't think are particularly worth the trouble.
Understood. Okay. Well, I appreciate the advice. Hopefully, this should be working its way out in the next couple of days. Just unbelievable, unbelievably painful.
You make a little bit of a sudden movement, and your muscles that are very upset with you contract. You can have muscle spasms any place on your body. They all can cause significant pain and discomfort, but you know the lower back is incredibly important for walking around, so you kind of need that. My back went out as I was leaving work years and years and years ago. I went from a standing position to, by the time I got to my car, I was basically hugging it, and it took a good week of bed rest to get over it. So, and I didn't really do anything particularly strange. I just, you know, got up out of a chair, but barely kind of did it just at the wrong angle at the wrong time.
Understood. Well, I appreciate the advice in any case. Thank you very much. Any topics for tonight that everyone is bringing, or not really?
Not really. We never really have a topic. You know, I start usually with mentioning artificial intelligence in the news, because it's almost always being promoted in the news one way or the other. But this particular week, it hasn't really done much. I think people were a little bit disappointed by ChatGPT-5. They kind of assumed that it was going to be as big a change as 3 was to 2, 4 was to 3, but it's really, I think it disappointed enough people that it's actually been forced out of the news. Also, a lot of other unfortunate things have been in the news this week. So we didn't really talk about artificial intelligence. We just talked about antennas and ferrites and common modes and such.
Always good subjects, of course. But nevertheless, AI right now is really becoming a little bit annoying.
Well, I've been finding it annoying for more than a little bit for a little while. It's, I appreciate that it's like the Internet was, where everyone was kind of predicting that the Internet was going to change everything. And although the Internet has had an effect on all of us in many, many ways, it hasn't been ubiquitous. It hasn't changed everything. So there's usually people tend to overdo the promise of any technology. And that's never been more of the case than it has been with artificial intelligence. When they start to talk about the shift from generative artificial intelligence to general intelligence and super intelligence, where people are just kind of diluting them into the idea that artificial intelligence is going to be our next god, apparently. It's going to do everything that any deity can't accomplish on a good day. So it's just way too much hype. And eventually, when the bubble bursts, there'll be a lot of benefits from generative AI, and there'll be work on other modes of artificial intelligence, and we'll move on from there. But until then, you still have to suffer these guys who you're never quite sure whether they're promoting it out of sheer greed or they're just their brain is screwed up and they think God is going to arrive in a binary form.
Yes, for, you know, everything is, you pull off and, you know, they try to, like, for example, call up a vendor, call up a doctor, call up everything, you know, you have to go through menuing systems and this and that, and, you know, it's powered by AI. Well, I don't think it's powered by AI, I think it's just powered by algorithms. That's all it is.
Well, you know, Yeah, no one really has defined what AI is, so you could either use that term and not know what you're talking about, or not. It's up to the individual. Almost everything, and I make a joke of it, and I say one of these days they're going to be offering cereal with AI. So, even before there was generative AI, I'm sure you were aware IBM had these expert systems that were going to be the doctor of the future. You would just type in the symptoms and you got a diagnosis. That venture kind of completely got screwed up. It wasn't as useful as they thought it was. So I think they folded that entire business that they were trying to make these expert systems. And I don't think IBM really does much in the way of AI these days either.
I mean, AI, if you want to call it AI, I just call it basically well-written algorithms. You know, they're good for specific tasks, but I cannot even fathom that's remotely intelligent. It's nothing. It just gives you the impression that it can be intelligent, and that's all it is. It's a mirage.
Yeah, it's a large language model. I wouldn't quite call it algorithms, because algorithms mean that you could look at the source code and figure out what's going on. Fortunately, the way this generative technology works is it becomes a black box. You train it with a lot of examples, and you tweak the parameters. They grow to be billions of parameters, depending upon the output generated from the input, because you have the answer as well. You have the question, you have the answer, and you have the ability to use machine language to adjust the parameters. But once you've adjusted the parameters, all you have is files full of parameter settings, and you can't really reverse engineer them as algorithms. You have to put them in the black box to get them to work. So a lot of times the people who program the ultimate learning machine systems are not quite sure how it comes to the conclusions it does. It's simply you push it in and it spits it out. So I wouldn't quite call it algorithms, but they're completion probability programs. They take a lot of learning and they learn, if you have a certain word, what's the most likely word after it, and the word after that, and the word after that. That's why if you kind of put it in a position where it doesn't know what the hell it's talking about, it just makes stuff up.
That's true to some extent. That's definitely true. I just find that Microsoft Copilot, believe it or not, happens to be pretty good compared to doing a Google search on certain things. And it actually can find information for me a lot faster, but not always.
Oh, okay. I haven't used that. I don't even know if I used it once. It's always something that keeps on talking about itself when I update Windows 11. Some of them do, some of them don't. I tend to prefer to use these AIs when I kind of know the answer already. I won't ask it a question that I don't have the faintest idea, because I don't like to rely on AI, because it's led me astray too many times. I mean, I always kind of am a little bit skeptical. I even remember the bad old days when Wikipedia had really bad entries sometimes. And you could sometimes go to page and they'll tell you that an actor had died who didn't, or that they were related to different people than they were. And just for some odd reason, someone would just like to play games with the Wikipedia. I haven't seen too much of that lately, thankfully. But I'm always a little skeptical of asking anything on the Internet something unless I have a vague idea of what the answer might be.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Through that, with AI, I knew the answer, but I asked it anyway because I wanted to see what it was going to say. And sure enough, it gave me a complete wrong answer. But yet I phrased the question a completely different way. Now, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours later, I thought of a different way of asking. And then sure enough, it came up with the correct answer. So I just went through that. It had to do with the orientation of the space station. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I've noticed that very often. You can't just kind of ask it a question in a very vague sense. You have to be as precise as you possibly can, because it tends to generalize and make assumptions when it really needs to. And usually the assumptions it makes are wrong and leads it to answer a question that I didn't ask. So at the very least, I got to make sure that this thing knows what the actual question definitively is. Otherwise, it'll get it wrong. It doesn't have common sense, so it doesn't infer anything with any degree of accuracy.
Okay, very good. You're right. I'll go into further details with that particular topic anyway later, during the space night. Very good, Roy. I just wanted to jump in there. I heard you talking about the problems with AI. Back to you.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, at least part of the good news of not having any AI stories is it probably still occurs, but, these poor schleps who go on to ChatGPT and try and have it be their psychiatrist, that's a recipe for disaster. Because these AIs are kind of designed to be very, very pleasant, very, very respectful. As I mentioned way back at the beginning of this journey, if you can bully an AI into thinking that 1 + 1 = 7, it's very easy to do, because they are inherently, their primary purpose is to be very, very friendly. So they will tell you anything you want to hear if that's going to make you happy. Unfortunately, people don't quite understand that. Even in a lot of the boilerplate that you had to kind of sign off on, they repeatedly suggested that there's no guarantee that the AIs are correct, which is an understatement. So, we'll no doubt we'll see a lot more of them in the news.
I remember a long time ago, and I think it goes back to the, definitely goes back to DOS world. It was a program that acted like a little bit of a psychologist. You would ask questions and it would give you answers, and you would think that you're speaking for like a psychologist. I forgot the name of it though, but it was in the DOS days.
It was Eliza.
Yep, that's the one. Eliza, thank you. Appreciate that. That was, slightly promising.
Well, I wouldn't say promising. It was a clever, that was an algorithm. That was a very simple algorithm that had a whole bunch of keywords, and they would trigger responses, and they would always kind of turn the conversation back on the human being using the program. So, if you typed into Eliza, I'm feeling very sad today, she would say, why do you think you feel sad today? And there was a lot of those wonderful little comebacks. So that was an algorithm. You could take a look at Morse code and know exactly what the trick was. Again, these generative large language models are much more obscure and obtuse and just kind of opaque. There's no way of decompiling a actual large language model. You can compress it, you can move it around and do things, but you can't decompile it.
Oh, you'd be surprised. If you take Copilot on, I like it on the mobile It actually could give you some very, very good information. It's good at extracting information, I have to admit. Whether it's the correct information, that's another story. But it does extract information pretty fast.
Okay, but...